by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, Drew Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Welcome into the show. Of course, it's been a wild summer, and Janet Millick is with us from Wyoming Game and Fish Department. Janet, this year has been the driest and most fires since I've been in Wyoming, and it has been absolute crazy all over the state.
You're right, Drew, and you know, as we often talk about on the show, it is different in every part of the state. And, you know, I often think about when I travel to different places that, like, oh, this place is always lush and green. The grass and, you know, forage is really high. It's a fantastic place to go. And, you know, this year it seems like every place I have gone is just not looking like that. It is brown. It is crunchy. It is almost devastatingly, like, not looking like our normal habitat and not looking like our normal Wyoming. And so, yeah, things are a little dry and crunchy out there.
You know, you even go up on Casper Mountain and the lookout, and you could see where the scars are from fires that have happened this summer. And they're still burning in some parts of the state. And it really is causing some major issues with not just the wildlife, but even the game and fish employees and those that are out boots on the ground.
Yeah, it is. It's been a really scary last couple months for a lot of our employees and a lot of people that live, you know, in Wyoming, a lot of firefighters. And we really just want to be thinking about all of them as we talk about all of this. And as we're recording this, we're in the throes of the Elk Fire, which is just outside of Dayton, or I guess is in Dayton this time. And so, you know, some pretty scary things that all of those people up there are facing. And you know, the thing that is so crazy is how many people it affects across the country, not just here in Wyoming.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit earlier that hunt seasons have begun already all over the state, and some people are maybe planning to come out and you know, things have changed because there are some animals that aren't in the areas that they normally would be. And it really is kind of a blank slate at this point for some areas.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, Drew, as you know, we use fire oftentimes along with a lot of our partner agencies for kind of controlled burns, prescribed burns, to really help improve the habitat. Right. Sometimes when we let things get too old and decadent, they don't produce good forage for our wildlife or for livestock or just, you know, good habitat in general. And so we do use that oftentimes. But when we have a lot of these wildfires in years like this, they are too hot. They burn, you know, too fast. Things aren't as mosaic as we would like. That's the word that we kind of use to describe a patchy fire, that so we can burn like a little patch here. So there's still the habitat intact around it. And it, you know, the new growth can just come up around that. But this stuff is ablazing and it is wiping out everything in its path. And so if you think about that in terms of wildlife, a lot of the lands that the Game and Fish has been putting in conservation easements, has been purchasing over the years, and are in places like our wildlife habitat management areas. And a lot of people know about those in different areas across the state. But the things that I'm thinking about right now are in areas of our Sheridan region, north towards Montana, the Bighorn Mountains. We have some like the Kearns. And we heard, you know, late yesterday that the Kearns has been completely wiped out. And so this winter range that, you know, we work really hard to maintain for the elk, deer, antelope that come down off of the Bighorn Mountains or kind of in from the prairie during this time of year, no longer have a lot of forage that, like I said, we work really hard to grow, quote unquote, in nature for those animals.
So it really is shambles in some parts. It's just devastating how many losses have been, I guess, you don't even know at this point because you can't even really get into those areas, right?
Yeah, you can't. And some of our employees are crossing fire lines as requested to help evacuate, you know, a lot of the people that are on the lands and the livestock that are on the lands. And so we haven't had a lot of time to get in there and really evaluate things, especially with conditions still being as hot and dry and high winds. It's just not a safe area. But the stuff we do know, of course, Drew, is not good. And some of the things that we've talked about in the past is, you know, fall green up and how critical that can be for kind of that last push before winter to get a lot of the nutrients that wildlife needs, kind of going in to kind of help make a healthy pregnancy throughout the fall and winter so that, you know, we have a great fawn to doe ratio when it comes around in June. And, you know, a lot of these areas, we're just not going to be able to have that because they are not going to have a lot of that forage. We may not have the fall green up. When we have these crazy winters and we don't have the forage, and by crazy winters, I'm thinking back a couple of years ago, you know, when we had 3 feet across the prairie and it was windblown and really wiped out a lot of the antelope populations and deer populations in different parts of the state. So we have that, you know, still in our mind is now what happens without a lot of that winter forage for those animals, wildlife, livestock, everything to kind of make it through the winter might be a little difficult.
I know that people think, you know, you hear this a lot when people go into Yellowstone or whatever, that when do they let the animals out of the cages and when do they, you know, when do you move them to here? But in the case of a real life situation like this, how does canned game and fish kind of help the situation along to where, you know, maybe you have large herds that are migrating in areas they're not used to migrating? And is there a way to avoid chaos?
You know, Drew, that is a fantastic question. And, you know, chaos may not be able to be stopped right now in the middle of these fires. Because like I said, it's a pretty dangerous situation out there right now for everybody. But in the off season, this is a great time for people to be thinking about things that they can do on their own land, things that they can volunteer for. You know, a lot of things that we're really working towards across Wyoming is wildlife friendly fences. And we're working with a lot of our partners, for example, YDOT, to be doing, you know, different fences along roadways and wildlife crossings and all sorts of things along those lines. And, you know, those things end up making a difference in a situation like this that really allows all of the critters out there to, in a case of an emergency, to cross fence lines, you know, to get through and to get out of the area that can be a little bit dangerous. And so we do want to encourage people who are passionate about this, like, hey, there are opportunities, not right now in the middle of things, but look around your local area, sign up for our volunteer program and, you know, put on there, want to help do wildlife friendly fencing, whether it's a donation, whether it's a volunteer time, there's things people can do.
Let's explain wildlife friendly fencing, because people are probably thinking, why do we need different fences? What's wrong with the fences that we have?
Well, there's a lot of things that, you know, of course, I wouldn't say that there are things wrong with the fences that we have. They're there for a reason. And the fencing that is placed there at whatever time it was placed was there for a reason, whether it was for, you know, cattle, for horses, for keeping, you know, people out of your property, whatever it was. But over the years, we have been finding different things, like instead of using a barbed wire top strand, if you use a smooth strand, deer, when they jump over, sometimes don't get hooked on it and flip and get caught in the fence. And so there, it's much easier for them to jump the fence. And if you are an antelope and you like to go a pronghorn and you like to go underneath the fences, sometimes the lower that bottom wire is, the more difficult, obviously, it is. I picture myself when I'm out hiking, trying to scurry under the bottom of that fence. It can be pretty entertaining at times. And so the higher up that is, the more skilled I look at what I'm doing. And so it's the same thing for an antelope, right? Like you're trying to get under that fence if it's just a little bit higher. And, you know, you can get on the Game and Fish website and you can find all those specs. We do have like how to make wildlife friendly fences, and it's a lot of work and it's really expensive. And so it's not something that everybody can do. But, you know, as a teamwork, this is something that maybe we can work for across Wyoming.
And that's one of the great things about those organizations like the Mule Deer Foundation, the Muley Fanatics and all of that, the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, because that's what their funding goes to is is helping the fences and in the long run ends up helping the wildlife. And Janet, I mean, what can we do to help in a situation like this?
We had some habitat biologists out oftentimes this time of year. They do a lot of their line transects to kind of determine, you know, growth of the forage throughout the year. And we had some folks reporting back that, you know, it is not looking good and things are crunchy, that there wasn't even enough forage to do their normal counts. And so another comment came in that as ATV users and truck, you know, whatever you happen to have out in the field, as you're driving off-road to retrieve your game or just to drive across road like some people do, that habitat is in such bad, you know, such a bad situation right now with poor forage that it's breaking off a lot of the grasses and, you know, smashing it down like we know, and you can see the treads go out across the prairie. And even that little bit of habitat destruction in years like this can be pretty critical to feed for wildlife and livestock. And so kind of keeping that in mind that, maybe you want to walk this year instead of driving your truck probably illegally across there anyway. But, you know, maybe make some good choices on how to do some of that game retrieval. Making sure if you are having a fire that you put it out completely. Making sure that as you park just off the road, right, if you're on a two-track, that your truck doesn't catch on fire. I can remember a couple years ago, or it's probably been a decade ago now, seeing a picture of a Game and Fish truck on the side of the highway fully engulfed in flames because, you know, the car collected grass in the undercarriage as they were driving across the prairie and just kept getting hotter and hotter and hotter. And by the time he got on the interstate and got those flames going, the truck went up in flames. So all of those things this time of year are things people need to be thinking about and fire safety. And, you know, we are not a fire agency. We rely on a lot of our partners for getting all that information out. But check out some of that stuff. It's pretty important right now.
I know that the fires continue to burn, and who knows what's going to happen for the rest of the fall and winter time. So we're really just hoping that things maybe start getting wet and, you know, rain falls and even some snow would be nice.
Yeah. But you and I both know, Drew, we've been watching that forecast pretty carefully, and you know, we're in the first, you know, couple weeks of October, and it's looking like a couple weeks until we even have remote forecast cooling down in the future, which is another thing that we can talk about is heat, hunting in the heat, because, you know, gosh, in the middle of October, this is something that is new to us, having 94 degrees out there. So life is just kind of crazy right now.
Yeah. And what you mean by hunting in the heat, if you harvest an animal and it's 94 degrees, things could go south very quickly.
Absolutely. And you know, don't get me wrong, I'm one of those fair weather people for sure. And so it is nice to have, you know, a little bit less cold when you're out there in the nature trying to survive as you're hunting across the prairie. But it is not okay sometimes when we harvest, it's hot. You know, and so some of the tips that Game and Fish really has is to keep in mind the you know, meat care of your game. So you have your harvest. There's lots of different things. I'm thinking just in the back of my head of like a game roll that you can hang your animal, whether it's over a tree, whether it's through a special system on the front of your truck, like a winch system. But getting your animal up, getting the hide off and letting it cool can be critical to saving that meat. Because you think about it, you know, that hide really keeps those little buggers warm throughout the winter. And so it's going to do the same thing. And a lot of people think that it insulates the meat as well. And so it keeps the heat off of the animal, and that's not necessarily what happens. So be thinking about getting your animal cool and dry as fast as you can. Water jugs full of ice, you know, coolers, getting it to a game processing. And I want to say, or wait till it cools down. But like I said, extended forecast doesn't show that as a promising option.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, hopefully the fires will, you know, extinguish themselves and no more damage will be done. And we'll kind of keep an update over the next couple of weeks, because this is something that's it's not going to end this weekend. I mean, it's something that's going to be a problem for a while.
Absolutely. And we just want hunters to know that are hunting in that area that to watch your email. Game and Fish is sending out updates on what we will be doing with licenses in those areas. Like I said, for the most part, we haven't made a ton of decisions yet, but we will be reaching out if we are refunding licenses, if we are deferring licenses. So just make sure when you sign up that you don't give us that fake email address like a lot of people do, because you might not hear from us. But definitely give us some time. Right now, the lines are really busy with people wanting to know what to do. But we'll be getting back to you guys, and you know, everyone in the state is trying to help in these situations, and let's hope for no more lightning strikes, and be thinking of our crews out there fighting the fires.
So Jana, if someone does have a bad email that they have given, is that able to be fixed so that you can get that information?
You're asking me these IT specialist questions now that I probably don't have the best answers to. But, you know, the portion that we're talking about is when you apply or buy and you click on that button in our Game and Fish system. And you do have to provide a, you know, a login with a password at some point. And if you go through that process, there is a place in there where you can update passwords, update email addresses, and you can do that. And so not guaranteeing that's an easy process, but it is doable. And have had to answer a couple questions about that this fall and walk some people through it. So good luck. That's all I have to say. And I think the kicker there is trying to remember all of the stuff that you put in initially. I know that I do that when I sign up for places, is like, well, who was I on this day?
Right.
So let's make sure that we have that. And again, if that's what you're choosing to do, a lot of that information will be available online and by phone call. So give our folks some time, but we'll help how we can.
Very good. Thanks so much, Janet.
Thanks, Drew.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward from Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. And Brian, we've been talking about a lot of different things this morning, because hunting season is full effect. We're getting that warmth in the daytime and the cool at night and the early mornings. And then we've even heard that the fishing is starting to really keep on rocking and rolling.
Yeah, you know, winter's around the corner, and if you didn't get those honeydews and your winter prep done before this week, you know, you might be behind the eight ball.
Yeah, we had talked to Game and Fish a little earlier too, that, you know, normally we're not seeing 90 degrees in early October, and it's been pretty warm throughout the time, and you know, the fires have been a big issue, but I really think there have been some people that have been pretty successful this early because of, you know, what we have going on here.
Yeah, when you look at the weather conditions and, you know, how hot it's been, and for guys to be successful in the field during that first archery season, you know, is pretty good, actually. I mean, guys definitely put the feet to the ground and covered some ground, and the elk kind of seemed like they weren't necessarily behaving like they normally would in September in a lot of areas. But yeah, this cooler weather, I think, has got some animals talking. We have had a lot of people from out of state in and seeing some really good success stories of guys out here with antelope and deer. And the fires in certain parts of the state here are definitely going to be a challenge for other people. But yeah, it's been a good early season, I think, for most people.
When it gets in the early seasons, it gets hot in the afternoon, like we mentioned, and cool at night, which, you know, it's great, but also it's not good for your meat. If you're getting an elk or an antelope or deer when it's 90 degrees, I mean, it could go bad quickly. And you guys have a full line of coolers that can really help out in that situation.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, people's thought process on how they're handling that, right? So we typically, a lot of retailers, you know, they don't bring out jet sleds until ice fishing season, you know, when guys are, you know, hauling stuff across the ice. But we're selling an awful lot of jet sleds for guys that are getting game out of the field. The game bags, there's all kinds of different ways. There's game carts that have been real helpful to just be able to get those trips back to the truck a little, you know, maybe a little more efficiently. But yeah, as hot as it's been, you know, it's really important to get those animals cooled down. If you have to leave them overnight, you know, get them hung up in a tree so that they can breathe and get the cavities open so that you don't spoil. Because as hot as it's been in the middle of the day, 80, 90 degree weather, you have a good potential of losing an animal real quick.
And with the technology of the Grizzly and the Wild Gear and the Yeti, I mean, they really are fantastic now, because if you wanted to freeze, say, ice jugs mm-hmm. and then keep it in your cooler, it's going to stay.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that I do for just even my day trips is I freeze my just regular water bottles, mm-hmm. you know, and I'll put those in a cooler, you know, to keep my other food cool. And then, you know, by the end of the day, you know, some of that's going to melt down. And if it's not melting fast enough, I put it in the back of the tailgate or in the window of the truck so it'll cool down. But, you know, you can use those frozen water bottles for a lot of different reasons. And especially if you're just freezing water bottles, you know, when you're packing in or packing out, you don't know how long you're going to be out in the field. So having a little extra water doesn't hurt either.
Right. You don't realize how much energy you're actually burning when you're just heading out and you have to make it back in. So, you know, having those packs there that you could break down and you know, it doesn't take much weight and could really be a light game changer.
Yeah. And you know what I noticed, especially like even when I'm fishing, you know, is one of the things I always forget to do is to keep hydrated, you know, you know, and when you're out elk hunting, you know, you're creeping around, you're walking through the forest here, and you know, I mean, you just kind of forget, you know. And so being able to have the equipment to at least take care of you in case you do need to spend an extra night, or maybe you've hiked a bunch and you were, you know, running your camelback and you ran it down, to be able to replenish that camelback while you're in the field. So, you know, we've got things like, you know, the hydro flask, we've got the life straws here, and the technology is really good on that kind of stuff. So you can, you know, not just survive, but you can kind of flourish in the outdoors there.
Well, make sure that you come in and check out everything that you're going to need. I mean, obviously, you're going to need a good knife. Maybe you need blade refills. Maybe you need to get new binoculars or optics. I mean, that still is all really important and can still be done now.
Yeah, it's funny because we had a guy in this earlier this week, and I was talking to him, and I'm like, so you're heading up? He goes, yeah, my buddies are already up there, and they text me down a list of things that they had forgotten, you know? So yeah. He had, like, six packs of blades, you know, for the yeah. Outdoor edge blades or Havilon blades. And so it's kind of funny, you know, like, just like, yeah, we talk about prepping a lot, but, you know, kind of having that list of, okay, what do I need? Do I need paracord? Do I need fire starting material? Do I need replacement blades? All that kind of stuff.
You know, and speaking of fire starting material, we are in an area now where fire is, you know, you can't have them in a lot of places. Right. So having that lantern that's battery operated, or, you know, having even a camp stove where you can actually cook food and stuff is very important.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the pieces of equipment that I always use that I a lot of times forget about is headlamps.
All
you
right.
know, in fact, I was using one the other day, and I was using a rechargeable one, and, you know, halfway through my trip, like, all of a sudden it goes out, and I'm like, huh, yeah, it's not even a replaceable battery one. So, you know, kind of look at the different options. You know, a replaceable battery one might be a better option, where you can keep an extra set of batteries in your pack, where you may not be able to get a headlamp recharged, you know, in a quicker fashion.
Right. And, you know, you guys, I do believe, have some of the solar chargers too, where you can, you know, you get those, and if you're in a tight spot and maybe your, you know, headlamp does go out, you can got those that are pretty easy to use.
Yeah, we've been carrying the Goal Zero stuff, and, you know, everything from, like, the small, you know, recharge your phone kind of, mm-hmm. you know, I think they're Nomad 20s or something like that. But we also have, you know, full 100-watt panels. So if a guy needs to put a charge on an ATV or a camper battery, or just be able to set up some type of a recharging system, those larger panels, obviously you're not packing those, but we do even have notebook size chargers. So if you needed to be in the field for, you know, and you have to have that, you know, that phone charged up, maybe you're backcountry and you're using the Onyx Maps quite a bit and your phone's drawn down, you know, a lot of these rechargeable, just smaller units that kind of look like a oversized cigarette lighter. They'll recharge a phone up to 3 times.
Right.
So
don't head out before you're ready, and get ready by coming into Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Just like Brian said, you know, maybe talk to a couple of guys and get some ideas and put together a list before you head out. CY Avenue in Casper or online at RockyMountainSports.com.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Drew, along with Brian Wood, we're back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where, of course, you can come in, say hey, get all your hunting gear. But, Brian, one thing that we have kind of put on the back burner is fall fishing, because the weather's been perfect for guys to go out and do some fishing.
Yeah, and, you know, for those of us that like to do waterfowl hunting, you know, the weather's so dang nice, it's hard to even get in the mood of, like, waterfowl hunting. So, yeah, the fall fishing has been really good. There's a lot of good reports from guys at Glendo and Pathfinder and Boisen. One of my buddies was over there the other day, and they caught 45 fish at Boisen. So it sounds like, you know, just about everywhere in the state, I think the fishing is going to be pretty good.
Are we to the point now where, I mean, it is still getting kind of warm in the afternoons, but I remember we always have that the spring where we're cold in the morning, hot in the afternoon. Are they pretty much the same way when it comes to the bite now, or is it totally different?
I think anytime you can get on the water, you're going to be able to find a fish that can bite. You know, it's yeah. you have to locate those fish that are feeding, and you know, I think the morning bite typically is a better bite any time of the year. However, this time of year, the morning bite, you know, can be not so comfortable, right? I mean, you're gonna be fishing with gloves on, or maybe even have your muck boots on, or a heavier pair of boots. And, you know, anymore, I'm starting to get a little soft in my old age, and you know, I'm gonna probably not go out at 6:30 in the morning, but I might, you know, push my morning till 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning. Once I get a little bit of sun on the BTUs, can you know, warm my face.
Right. Yeah, you know, we always talk about, you know, the jig and the worm is the classic way to fish, and mm-hmm. we all started with, you know, just bobbers and whatever. But I remember this summer where it was to the point where it was pretty hot, so you had to go pretty deep. Now, are those fish coming back up, or are they?
It kind of depends on the reservoir. You know, typically this time of year, there's still a pretty good deeper bite, you know, even, you know, 12 to 30 foot deep. However, you know, Glendo, they finally put the plug back in it. The water level is going to start rising, and kind of talk about this in the past, is that when the water's rising, the fish will go shallow, and that'll work going all the way into ice on. So, you know, don't think that just because the last 2 or 3 weeks that you've been fishing in 25 to 30 foot of water with jigging wraps and spoons, that that's going to be the bite all the way till ice on. Now, I'm not saying you're not going to catch fish in those depths of water, but don't be afraid to cast up there in 6 inches of water and work it all the way back out.
Right, because there's always that possibility that you're going to get in there and get something good. And, you know, it's been a weird weather year, I think, and I think we talk about this every year because it's either really cold really early or it's hot late. And this year, we're not even seeing rain in the forecast for 10 to 14 days with 70s to 80s for temperatures. So, I mean, it could be a late year of fishing.
Yeah, you know, last year there was guys that had their boats on Glendo all the way up till Christmas Day. So, you know, I know that there's some predictions that we're going to have a pretty tough winter. I'm also hearing that that's going to be like a January, February type of winter. But, mm-hmm. you know, you just never know. And if you have an outboard, you know, I always try not to put my boat away too early because, yeah. you know, there's going to be a couple of good running days that the weather's going to hold out where you're going to be like, yeah, I need to get on the water. So the bite will continue to stay good. And, you know, you and I both have like kind of later season cow tags. And so, you know, the month of October for me is I don't have a whole lot of things planned. You know, the duck season closed, goose season closes this weekend. This afternoon I'm going to take my boat out and go run it. And then I've got a trip that I've got a gentleman coming out, and we're going to go fish Wednesday, Thursday. And I haven't really decided where we're going to go yet. I haven't been on Glendo for a little while, so I might go to Glendo. But the bite at Pathfinder is always fun because you can catch quantities of fish generally. All right. And That dang bite over at Boysen is always intriguing. I really like that jig and wrap bite and finding those humps that are out there in that 15 to 30 foot of water and just seeing, you know, playing around out there and looking at that stuff. So I haven't figured out where I'm going to go Wednesday, Thursday, but I will be on the water those 2 days for sure.
Well, luckily we have lots of options. And if you didn't want to go that far, you could even go down and hit the river and do some river fishing because that's good all year round.
Yeah, it's interesting this time of year, you know, just talking to customers that come in the store, but we have a lot of out-of-staters that are in here for an antelope hunt, and a lot of them are self-guided, but there's a lot of them that are working with some of the local guides here, and, you know, they come out and they schedule a 3 or 4 day trip, and they, you know, see a nice antelope the first day and they shoot it. So now they're twiddling their thumbs for the next 3 days. And we've had a lot of guys that are coming in here and said, hey, you know, I'm staying at this hotel and I got this river behind me. Is there any fish in it? And how, you know, can I catch fish or what do I use? And then there's other guys that had another group of guys that had got an antelope that morning, and that afternoon they were booking an afternoon float trip with the Crazy Rainbow. So there's lots of good fishing even just in town.
And you know, in on another hand too, is we also have upland bird season that's in here, and turkey season goes until almost the end of the year. So there really is a lot of options that if you do kill out, you can come in to Rocky Mountain Discount Sports and get that over-the-counter tag.
Yeah, I think Sage Grouse is officially closed as of the 1st or the 31st or whatever that was. Yeah. But like a lot of guys that I'm talking to are still seeing quite a few huns. So that's kind of cool. If you haven't experienced that, I mean, it's kind of a different, you cover some ground and, you know, get some good exercise in, but those birds are fun to chase also.
And I remember, you know, last year, we were out on a goose hunt and the goose wasn't that great. And old Bernard went out and started shooting doves. So,
yeah, well, you know, you can shoot Eurasian doves, all year long. Yeah. They're an invasive species, I guess. And like you said, there's tons to do. You know, I'm talking to lots of these guys that are coming in hunting. They're going out prairie dog hunting. You know, these outfitters are said, hey, we got your antelope. You know, we can get you on some, you know, prairie dog towns. And man, those guys just love the heck out of that. And then you have just the other group of guys that are, you know, are gearing up for coyote season and some of the competitions that come up during the winter, but they're just getting their guns dialed in and loads and working on the reloading and that kind of stuff to be ready for that season.
So it's so fun this time of year. And I was invited to go prairie dog hunting the other day. They're killing up a guy's yard, and he's like, take care of it, please. I'm like, okay, I'm in.
You can take those offers occasionally, but not when they're in the city limits, Drew.
Oh. Well, all right, fine. But, well, no matter what you're going to do, make sure you stay busy and come in here and check it out, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Or if you're just looking around, go to RockyMountainSports.com.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
Thanks for keeping it here on Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors. We have a great art community in Wyoming. If you love the outdoors, you want to check out Travis Glasgow's 307store.com. If you have an outdoor-themed room or a man cave or a she shed, he has got artwork that you want to check out. I love watching Travis's career take off. He's got a new artwork all the time at 307store.com. And Travis, you have something new going.
So, I've renewed my contract with Hoffman Fabrics, and this new line is called Nature Woven. And really, it's just a fall theme. So there's a lot of different fall colors in it. There's reds, oranges, yellows. You can see with some of the work that you've looked at that, you know, the elk is prominent. There's a lot of fall colors in there, fall leaves, just a lot of landscape photos, fall related. So that's what they were looking for. And I had a lot of content for that. So I sent that over to them, and they said, let's do it. Let's put together another line.
That's so fantastic.
So we have this nature woven line.
So have you actually got any of the fabric and made anything out of it? Do you have pillows or quilts or anything on your walls?
No, not me. My mom actually ordered the previous line, and so she has a quilt from Hoffman. And that was made locally, too, by a lady here in town who I think she's contracted or she works for Prism Quilts. So yeah, I mean, not me personally, but my family, yes, they do have some of my work on fabric.
That has to be so cool to go over and all of a sudden you see, you're like, man, that I've worked a lot of hours to put all that stuff together. And sure enough, look at that.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it feels great. It looks great. You know, Prism, they do a great job, and Hoffman, they're exceptional, you know.
We have talked a lot over the last couple of years about all of your artwork and all of the work that folks can get at 307store.com and a little background on you, Travis. Let's talk about the way you got started and really got rolling in the art industry.
Yeah, so basically I started Microsoft Paint. I dabbled on Microsoft Paint about 20 years ago, 25 years ago maybe. And really just started to develop from there. I started to get into different programs and then eventually into Photoshop. There's another program called GIMP. It's the open source version of Photoshop, and I've used that a lot lately. And just developed my graphic design skills over the last 20 years and started to get into photography about 8 years ago. And I'm a runner, so I'm outside a lot, and I hike a lot, so I'm out in nature, and anytime I see something, I just snap a photo of it, whether it's, you know, it's on my phone or whatever. I just try to capture that image, and then I'll think about how I can integrate that image into wildlife.
Which, if you think about the last 25 years, you started working with paint, and, you know, phones didn't have cameras really at that time, so you had to walk around with a digital camera or maybe even a disposable camera of some sort, and how times have come along where your phone has just as good of a camera as, you know, a lot of people have nice cameras. You know, you can get a lot of great pictures in there. And do you find it to be easier for you to be inspired with, you know, having your phone in your pocket and that knowing that it's good quality?
So much more. Yeah, so much more. I'm always thinking every time I'm out, I'm thinking about, you know, how I can capture the best image and then integrate that into my artwork, because I know that I have a huge piece of my art with me, you know, at all times, my phone, my camera.
Which is absolutely awesome that, you know, you can really be out in the morning and get a great sunrise or a great, you know, opportunity of a photo, and by noon you could be already working on that next big piece of art that someone's going to make a quilt or a pillow out of.
Absolutely. There's three images just in Nature Woven that I'm looking at right now. There's a leaf in one of the fabric designs, a red leaf, and the landscape image there and the leaf, that photo was taken on Casper Mountain. And then there's also a fall photo taken that's kind of in the middle of this fabric, this design I'm looking at. That was taken along the North Platte River. And there's a bison design with the Indian paintbrush that was taken on Casper Mountain as well. So a lot of these photos in this particular line are sourced locally, and there's a few of them that are the Grand Teton National Park as well. So there's one, let's see, it looks like Lower Yellowstone Falls, and then a few Grand Teton National Park photos as well blended in.
It is fantastic. I'm checking this line out. Now, this line will be available to suppliers and dealers soon, but then it'll be available to public after the first of the year, right?
That's right. Yep. Starting in January, it'll be available to the public. Hoffman Fabrics, they work with hundreds of retailers throughout the country. So, yeah, people can order through their local retailer. Locally, I like to work with Prism Quilt and Sew. They're downtown on East 2nd Street, and they'll have that available.
So the last line, is it still available that you had, the first line that was out?
Yep, it's still available. Yep, you can order through your local retailer.
Which is so cool to think about this. And, you know, I've never been one that was very artistic, but one of the things that I love about Wyoming is the love of art. I mean, you look around Casper and you see art everywhere. And, you know, like you, if you have a phone, you're looking at art at all the time. And I'm seeing a lot of young people that are really getting in to art. And what would you tell someone if they're young and they're trying to get started? What should they do?
I think they should just keep working at it. I mean, keep trying to figure new things out, keep exploring. I wasn't much of a photographer before. You know, like I said, I have over 20 years of graphic design experience, but that was graphic design experience, not so much photography. That is more of a recent development. So I think just, you know, it takes time to find yourself, to develop yourself. I really found this with photography, with that help of photography. And so I just had to keep working at it, keep finding my niche, I guess.
And obviously your work has been displayed all over the state, and people can go to 307store.com, and you have a lot of new artwork that is up there that is for purchase. And I was looking at one of them that really caught my eye is the new picture with the moose. There was just something about that picture that kind of reached out and grabbed me. I'm like, man, that is just fantastic.
That was called Big Country. And yeah, that's the moose. That photo, that wildlife photo, was a collaboration, and the landscape image was taken at Glacier National Park. I went to Glacier National Park this summer, so I've got lots of great photos from there that I want to use moving forward.
So cool. And I encourage people, if you're looking for a print, maybe as a gift, or maybe you're redecorating your home in an outdoor manner, Travis has exactly what you want. I'm telling you, these prints are fantastic. Go to 307store.com. You can find that there. And, of course, Hoffman's will be your outlet. You can go online to get it, or Prism Quilts here in Casper to get that new line, which is called Nature Woven. It'll be available to the public after the first of the year. And Travis, it's so cool to see you inspired and really just keeping your nose to the grindstone and keep putting out great work.
It's easy to do. I love it.
Very cool. Well, thanks again for joining us, and good luck with this new line.
All right. Thanks, Drew. I appreciate it.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.